We made this.
And welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe for the We Made This Podcast Network. I am your host today, Luke Winch, and today we will be diving into the second episode of the Disney Plus series Loki, The Variant. And today my guests will be my co-host Cobb to Lockwood and guest Rowan May. Hello to you both.
Hello.
We are the variants.
Oh gosh.
Of this episode.
How are you both today?
Doing good. We just rewatched the episode with our housemate. We're ready to chat.
Excellent. So before we kind of go into a deep dive, I'd like to hear both of your kind of overall brief thoughts on this episode and also a score out of 10. So, Carpenter, let's start with you.
Oh, boy. As I said when I was talking with Mark, I don't really do marks out of 10. Me and Mark don't vibe with marks out of 10. I gave last episode maybe an 8.5 or something. I think our official ranking was 16 Lokis. So I'll give this episode a solid 72.3 Lokis. And
that's
y'all
a lot
figure
of Lokis.
Out what that means. That's a lot of Lokis, but is it? You know, you don't know the scale. yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. I think when I watched it the first time around, I was feeling weirdly not hype about it because everyone was like, oh my God, it's Lady Loki. I was like, yeah, we knew this was happening, right? but no, it's so exciting. And also, I just love seeing Marvel finally give us the domestic fantasy in this series. You know, we've got WandaVision's domestic bliss, and then the cookout and Falcon the Winter Soldier and all the family stuff, and now we just get to see Loki with a desk job, and I just love it.
Yeah, definitely. Rowan?
Yeah, I agree with Carpenter. I think one of the things that obviously had to happen with the first episode is that a lot of it is set up of establishing the universe and the characterization and establishing like the major plot hooks. I feel like this one got into the action a lot more. And I really like that. I think, yeah, I'd probably give this like kind of an 8-9 out of 10. But then again, I don't have a lot to go on yet because we're only on 2 episodes of however many we're going to get. So, but I'm excited. It seems like it's on the up and up. And that's really, really exciting for me.
Yeah, it is. It is hard to rank these episodes out of 10 because it's such a short series. It's only 6 episodes. So until you have the whole piece, it's quite hard to kind of rank the individual pieces. But I think I'd go with an 8 out of 10. This episode was very talky, but I didn't mind that. I didn't mind that at all. There was a lot of concepts explained to the audience, a lot of kind of discussion back and forth between Loki and Mobius. There's a particular scene that we'll get into later, which I thoroughly enjoyed. But yeah, what I'm really liking about Loki, because I was originally going to be on the primer, but I had to bail out for whatever reason it was at the time. but what I really like about this so far is it's much more unpredictable than the other two have been. I think there was a through line that audiences could kind of see in WandaVision and in the Falcon Winter Soldier. And the beauty of this TV series is that this TV series is as unpredictable as Loki themselves. And that's what I really like about it. And even though in various points in this episode, you can think, oh, I know what his plan is. I don't think we do. I don't think Loki really knows what his plan is.
Yeah.
And that kind of final dive into the gate at the end, I think, was an on the spot decision, and I don't think he actually intended to do it in the first place. So that kind of spontaneous kind of behaviour, I think, is a great encompassment of the TV series itself at the minute.
Yeah, definitely. I like that we get to see the kind of different. The different ways like Loki presents himself to all the different people. I think we see quite a lot of it. It's quite nice in this episode. Is like he does the clueless thing, you know, like the, oh, you've caught me out. But I feel like the sort of true Loki on the inside is just silently taking in information. You know, like if he wasn't acting over that, he would literally just be watching and just thinking about everything. But then he presents as the, oh, you caught me out. And, oh, I didn't know that. I've just caught up to this. But on the inside, I think he's just very cool and calculated. But on the outside, he plays the fool a little bit, particularly like around Mobius. And then we get like a lot of the suave trying to blend in, particularly when he's talking to that desk lady and he's like, ah, we apex near the red line, you know how it is. And it's like, and I just love seeing his different performances.
Definitely. Like, I think as well, this is the first time in any really kind of Marvel media that's included Loki that we've actually been presented with someone, and he's been presented with someone that can, like, yeah, that can accurately, like, call him out on his bullshit in the way that Mobius can.
That's a naughty word.
Like, we get a little bit of it in Ragnarok of, like, Thor being able to understand when Loki is pulling tricks, but there's no one that we've come face-to-face with yet, bar Mobius and some of the Time Variance Authority, that are able to just keep up with him. And that's new for us as an audience and for him as a character. And having to see him adapt to that. And like the scene where he's trying to explain, oh, you probably wonder what happened back out there in the mission in Wisconsin. Well, I was testing you, and watching him have to do that and have to justify his own tricks, which he's never had to do before, is such an interesting character arc that we've never seen. And it's such a new way to explore the character and what he does and how he thinks, which I'm very excited to see more of.
It's awesome, because I think Loki's, you know, very much a swan-type fellow. There's a lot going on under the surface, and I feel like making him have to analyse and justify his own actions so outwardly is really fun. Mm. We're getting to see a lot more parts of his personality than we would do if he was just around people who were less used to his antics or less versed in his antics.
Yeah, he's always had to adapt and alter the way he interacts with people, because he hasn't got his powers, so he can't be his tricksy self. So he's having to, I think he's having to use his brain a little bit more than usual, or in a different way anyway. And but I think this Loki the TV series, I think, is also the most, I think you and Mark touched upon this as well last week, is the most metatextual of all the TV series. And I love that opening scene when the variant takes over the Minutemen's, I think it was Hunter D20, takes over her body, and you get Bonnie Tyner's Holding Out for a Hero playing as she takes him out. And it's wonderfully subversive in that Loki, I think, in his mind, thinks he's the hero. Larger than life, I am the hero. So I love that lovely subversive moment in that scene.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're big fans of that moment, because like I Need a Hero is like one of our songs, you know, it's like our karaoke pick. We love it. And obviously the best version of that song is in Shrek 2. And like any great action scene works with I Need a Hero. And I feel like it's such a great moment as like a fan who has seen countless edits of Marvel fight scenes to I Need a Hero, to see one in the show is so fun.
There's that element of just slight ridiculousness about it.
Yeah.
Of it, the same kind of feeling of hearing the Immigrant Song in Ragnarok. It's and the initial like 50s style opening song of WandaVision. Of there's that bit in your mind of like, is that happening? Is that happening in this proper official Marvel Disney TV show. Okay.
Yeah. We've gone a long way from the original films taking themselves so seriously.
Yeah.
It's great.
Nice to see that element of just, you can, it's a superhero film. It's got an inherent campness about it. It always has done, and it's nice to see that being embraced again.
Yeah, Marvel doesn't mind taking the piss out of itself, and I think this TV series Loki is really playing with that. He's really meta with it, which I love. That conversation that Loki and Mobius have much later about how ridiculous Mobius's belief in the TVA is, and then Mobius comes back, well, you're from Asgard, who you were raised by frost giants, and then, you know, it all sounds ridiculous, and it does. We know that as the audience, but because Marvel is just so good at creating these worlds and writing these characters and then hiring these actors who really, really embody these people, you kind of just go along with it and you go along with their journey. And but there is an inherent ridiculousness about it all that Marvel's not afraid to poke fun at.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so much fun.
Yeah. So we get Miss Minutes back. I know that she's a favourite of yours there, Carpenter.
I love her. Miss Tara Strong is a legend.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Miss Minutes' voice. I think she's really fun. Also, it's nice to see her out of the screen. It's interesting to maybe discover... I know she's just kind of like a small mascot of the series, but it would be interesting if we get to find out what exactly she is. Because Loki is like, can you hear me? Like, are you a recording? Like, what are you? And she's like, both. She seems to be some sort of like hologram AI kind of thing. But at the same time, all of this was created by the Time Variant. So she could just be like a living tech being, you know, that just exists on a digital space.
Mm.
But that also implies that the timekeepers really go for this whole aesthetic, so much so that they created Miss Minutes, and I love that.
Yeah, yeah, that was them. We do have to really applaud the timekeepers' commitment to the aesthetic, I think.
Yes, we really do.
They could have been anything, and they became beige, and honestly, I admire that.
Yeah, they could have been anything, and they chose, what is it? 860s?
Yeah, the wonderful contrast of like 70s beige and orange. Like,
yeah. I love it. Again, I think I mentioned this like one of the last podcast episodes. Someone was complaining that they've been wanting like really good Loki merch for so long, and we finally get more Loki merch and it's beige.
It's beige.
So that's not what we were expecting. But the aesthetic of the TVA is fantastic. I raved about it in previous episodes. I love this kind of visual storytelling, the details, the set dressing. That's what I do as an artist, and I love that level of detail.
Yeah, last week when they had the whole Miss Minutes animation, I was really reminded of the Mr. DNA from Jurassic Park, and that whole kind of explaining something, you know, Dan, old DNA, that kind of vibe, and I really love that. And this week, have any of you guys played the Fallout games before?
No.
No,
I am aware of them. I've watched them being played. Yeah,
yeah. There's a thing that you as a player, you wear a big kind of wristwatch called the Pip Boy, and the screen that he has looks so much like that. It's this weird kind of retro pastiche look, I really, really enjoy that kind of whole look and the aesthetics of the TVA. It's wonderful. So what do you guys think to Loki and Mobius's, I'm going to call it friendship, because I think that's the only word I can use, but they're kind of growing admiration for each other, actually, I think is a better way of putting it, and how that's kind of going through this episode up to the end.
They're so fun. Also, I love Owen Wilson once again taking one of his fellow queers to Pompeii to watch the volcano erupt. I'm not going to lie, Night at the Museum is one of the best children's trilogies ever made, and that's what I like Owen Wilson most for, is being Jedediah in Night at the Museum, and I'm not afraid to admit it. And I think that's a funny parallel. That was probably not intentional. I think, like, Pompeii is just an iconic apocalypse that they chose, but that's really funny to me.
Mm. Yeah, I think their relationship is one that's, like, really interesting in that we've never really seen Loki interact with a person like Mobius before. I've seen some really interesting takes on it as well, of, like, the way that Mobius speaks to Loki and the way that he seems to know exactly what to say to get under his skin, of, like, you know, calling him scared little boy, and then in the first episode of talking about of showing him that video of all of the futures that he'll never see, including, you know, the death of his own mother that he indirectly or directly caused. So it's interesting that despite that kind of camaraderie friendship that they're forming, there's always that little bit of tension of, you have Loki, who is this chaotic, hyper-intelligent demigod, against Mobius, who serves order, and that is his purpose, who is also hyper-intelligent. So there's that wonderful parallel between them of, oh, are they going to be friends? Are they going to fight? We don't know. It's interesting to see them interact and to watch how that's due to develop over this next coming series.
Yeah, it's also nice, I think, that you definitely see that they respect each other, which is interesting because, like, Mobius is, like, a fan of Loki. He's analysed his whole part on the sacred timeline and all of the variant Lokis that they have pruned, as well as being kind of one of the leads on this case of the variant Loki running around killing Minutemen. But also that Loki respects him, because obviously Loki puts himself above pretty much everyone he's ever met. But he definitely seems to have this underlying respect that he's earned for Mobius, because Mobius can match him. Mm. Which is really sweet when he does his little theatrical little explanations, and he's got, like, the "are you proud of me" kind of face when he gets something right, which is just so cute.
And that's important, because I think one of Loki's main motivations for doing what he does in this episode is because he has to be right. He likes to be right, and Mobius uses that to his advantage in taking Loki with him. And I think Mobius's scene with Ravonna is very revealing. Mm. By the way, I absolutely love Guga Mbatha-Raw. I think she's fantastic as Ravonna.
Yeah. Mm, she's great.
Yeah, she's brilliant. But it's quite a revealing conversation between those two, because she talks about Mobius's penchant for broken things. Mm. And, you know, I've never looked at Loki as a broken character before, but looking at him now and what he saw in his life in the previous episode and the death of his mother, and then looking at the destruction of Ragnarok in the files later on, he is kind of broken, and he's homeless, and he's got no one apart from the TVA and Mobius at the minute. And I just found that quite an affecting scene and a new kind of direction for Loki.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Loki's always been about the trauma, you know, some good queer trauma, because he, like, kind of had, like, a pretty cool life, and then he realized he wasn't an Asgardian in the first place. You know, like, from when we first met Loki, he kind of just gets, like, kind of shuffled up and broken apart, and not, like, destroyed, because he's very adaptable. But there's definitely always been, like, this underlying trauma, the sad little boy that Mobius mentioned. I feel like I have a theory or something about this scene with Renslayer. And it's just because of the way they shot it. This is just a little prediction. I could be totally wrong. We'll see what happens.
Looking forward to this.
but all the, you know, half of the trinkets, the little trophies that she has in her office, Mobius points out that he doesn't remember them. And she's like, oh, I've got another analyst, which is, you know, the TVA seems pretty infinite. That totally makes sense. But then the thing with the glass, when he goes to put it down, she's like, use a coaster. He's like, the rings are already there. Yeah, they're from you. And then they film him putting the glass on the coaster. Like, it zooms in on that. And I went back to the first episode to see if we saw her office, but we didn't. But I want to keep my eye on that table because I feel like we might get a scene where there isn't rings on the table or there's a lot more, you know, because, like, I just get the vibe. Obviously, we get the vibe that Mobius doesn't know everything about the Timekeepers. He's being kept in the dark by Renslayer by a lot of things. And I kind of get the impression that, like, Mobius is being played way more than he realizes. Mm. So, you know, I get the impression that maybe he's being memory wiped or cloned or, like, time looped. And maybe all of these trophies are from him, he just doesn't remember them. You know, like, I don't know, I'm just kind of getting that kind of vibe, you know, because all of the people in the TVA are made by the Timekeepers. So, you know, they could have just made this one guy for this one job, and every time he gets too big for his boots, they just reset him or something. You know, I wouldn't put it past Marvel to do something like that.
Yeah. I think as well of the fact that specifically in the first episode, we got that huge emphasis on time works differently in the TVA. And as of yet, we've not really seen that. We've just sort of seen a very big, seemingly infinite office that's, really impressive, but we've not seen any elements of that, of how time works differently or whatever. I think there's a scope there for a lot of jumbling and fumbling with timelines, not just outside of the TVA, but within the TVA itself. And after now, with the end of episode 2 and the bombing of the sacred timeline, I think we're going to be getting a lot more of that and seeing the fallout, a lot more shenanigans. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's really interesting what you said there, Carpenter. And I think the scene where Mobius and Loki are talking about the TVA and both their origins, there's a blind faith that Mobius has with the TVA. It is almost like a religion and it's this kind of belief system. And I think that might tie in somehow to the TVA, who I think are quite sinister. And I'm not, I think this is going to, well, this is my kind of theory, but it's a much more vague theory than yours was. I think the TVA are much more of a dictatorship than a guardianship. Yeah. And this sacred timeline is a form of control somehow by these timekeepers, who may or may not be lizard people, as Loki puts it. I'm just wondering down the line in the future episodes where we are, we may get the true motive of the timekeepers. I don't know, I could be completely wrong, but I just get this sinister overlord type vibe with the TVA, and I think that's, and maybe they are basically, maybe Mobius has got some kind of time leash on him somewhere else, and they just keep reversing him back, so that, you know, there's the rings on the table, on the glass, where he just keeps coming back to the office again and again and again because he's failed with Loki or something.
We had that again in the beginning episode of Loki's assessment of how the TVA is an illusion for the weak to control the strong. And then in the second episode, Loki's statement of how he loves to be right. I wouldn't put it past Marvel to have had Loki be right from the beginning. That is what the TVA is the TVA is an illusion created by the weak to control the strong. And then once we finally meet the Timekeepers in whatever episode that we meet them in, then we just see exactly what Loki predicted that we would see right from the very beginning.
Yeah, I very much get the vibes with the Timekeepers, particularly with the inconsistencies with Renslayer. You know how she's the judge? And she's like, oh, well, they dictate the proper order of time. He's like, what do? I dictate the proper order of time through their dictations. And it's like, I kind of get the vibe. I think they did this in Supernatural where it was like God isn't here anymore. Like heaven, like angels are just running heaven and pretending that God's still there, but he's not. And it's kind of, I kind of get the vibe that they're just like, there's a level of illusion that I feel like Renslayer's in on. You know, that maybe the timekeepers aren't even behind the scenes anymore, you know? Maybe they've gone, or maybe they don't care, or maybe they've abandoned this timeline. I don't know. They just kind of feel like they're not, because we've only ever seen them talked about. I kind of get the sense that maybe they're not even there, you know?
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, even if you look at the name Minutemen, I mean, if you look at the actual our historical context of it, there were civilian colonists during the American Revolutionary War who were independently formed militia. They were self-trained in weaponry, and they were known for being ready at a minute's notice to respond to any war threats. So putting that in the context of the TVA, I get a very kind of militaristic type kind of vibe with that, which I also find very interesting. Yeah. They're there like that. And they
it's
respond.
Also a nice pun.
It is a nice pun. Yeah, definitely is a nice pun. But yeah, but thinking about that kind of context, that military context, it just makes that sinister feeling with the TVA as well.
Mm. Although speaking of historical context, is with the TVA, I can't help but be slightly uncomfortable with the lizard people jokes because. I don't know if I'm exactly getting this right, but the lizards people controlling society, that's like a root in, like, is it anti-Semitism?
It's an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. The idea of the hidden lizard people who are specifically controlling like the finances and things like that. It's unfortunately, a very common kind of conspiracy theory that a lot of people have forgotten its roots.
Where it comes from. Yeah, which is why I'm kind of a little disappointed in that being put in, because, like, obviously when you're writing this kind of thing and you're writing something that has to be so aware of history to play with history, that they're choosing this throwaway joke without looking at what it means. And also, like, Loki wouldn't make that joke because he's not from Earth, and that's like an Earth joke that has, you know, come boiled down through the ages and lost its roots.
Mm.
So it's like, for like people who have forgotten what it means, it's kind of a typical joke conspiracy theory about ominous power, but. To Loki, it's not even a turn of phrase.
Mm.
And to writers, I think they should do better.
Yeah.
I don't like that as a throwaway joke. There's no basis for Loki to say it, and we shouldn't still be making that joke.
Yeah, that's honestly, Carpenter, something I never even thought about. And now you've brought it to my attention, I can definitely understand the uncomfortableness. Because wasn't it David Icke who kind of bastardised that kind of conspiracy theory and really drove forward? I think he wrote books about it. But I completely understand that kind of uncomfortableness and the anti-Semitic vibes behind it is not very nice at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also a major vibe with why... I mean, obviously, with the ominousness and the mysteriousness, we are being given the vibe that the timekeepers are probably not benevolent, particularly because their sacred timeline involves the Nazis, and the Nazis still existing. So we know that the sacred timeline is not for the benefit of humanity, because surely any timeline without Nazis is probably a better one. You know, and that's just a whole kettle of fish. But the Nazis are a big part of the MCU in terms of their Earth history because of, you know, Captain America and all the other heroes that came from that era. So that's interesting.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because I don't think a lot of people think outside of the context like that. So it's great that I get to come on a podcast with you guys and that those kind of ideas are brought into
dive.
This. It's great.
Yeah,
I love it. So I just want to talk a little bit about the library scene. was anyone else completely in love with the most disinterested librarian I've ever seen on screen?
I love her so much.
She's the
best. And also that she's probably like, you know, like I feel like she's probably one of those kind of living computer type beings that has just the knowledge of all of the computers and all of the permissions across the TVA. Like, she's just aware of that. And so I just love that, like, Loki's trying to schmooze with her and she's just like, I know exactly who you are and exactly what you're allowed to see. I don't care.
Also, the fact that she likely is a character like that, where she has this infinite knowledge and she's incredibly smart, and then the bell on her desk just doesn't work properly, is just... Mwah.
Also, I love that shot is in the outro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him pressing the bell, that's actually Loki's hand in the outro.
That's brilliant. But then it is followed by a lovely scene where he finds the file on Ragnarok, and there's just that close-up shot of his eyes. Absolutely beautiful and quite affecting.
With the Asgard music as well.
Yeah, with the Asgard music. Yeah, yeah.
Beautiful.
I remember a lot of people talking about how, because this isn't Taika Waititi's Loki, this is 2012 Loki, they were kind of upset that so much of his characterization and his character development was going to be, like, thrown out the window. And the fact that that was so quickly remedied by the video shown in episode one and the file found in episode two of, like, this is everything that you've missed, but, you know, they've managed to bring it back and to still tie it into his character is a really, really clever writing, I think. And it's done in a way that doesn't feel forced. It feels right. It feels natural. And the way that it affects him as a character feels natural in... So I think the conversation he has with Mobius when he's like, oh yeah, the destruction of Asgard and almost all the people on it, I'm very sorry. And he just goes, yes. Very sad. Anyway, like, it feels perfectly in tune with what the 2012 Loki that we know and the intense amount of character that got thrown at him in episode one and two. It just ties it all together very nicely, and I'm very glad that that's how they handled that.
Yeah, I think me and Mark mentioned in previous podcast episodes that I know that we were kind of worried about the erasure of Taika's addition to the MCU, particularly with how the Russos kind of manhandled it in Endgame and Infinity War. But I think they've done really well with this. And we get bits of the, like, the quick in the middle of a con Loki that we got on Sakaar, which is really fun.
And also, if you think about it, when Mobius is talking with Ravonna, has that really metatextual moment where Mobius basically says, you know, maybe he likes to mix things up. He gets bored of playing the same part. And giving us a completely different Loki to the Taika Waititi Loki is exactly what this show is doing. Mm. It's giving us another route, another characterization of Loki.
Another variant.
Another variant, exactly. So, you know, I like the fact that Loki is different to how he's going to be throughout the normal MCU timeline. And, you know, maybe he does like to mix things up. Maybe he does get bored of playing the same thing all the time. So it's a great kind of metatextual thing that's going on there.
Mm. Like, this, the entire existence of this show just adds to Loki's status as a trickster, because it's presenting yet another facet of him. It's not, you know, the same character that we see in the first Avengers film or in the Thor films or wherever else we've seen Loki. It is another one that is different and new and is working with that. And I really enjoy that about this series, about how, I think you mentioned it before, of how this series is as unpredictable as Loki himself, and the way that they're presenting the character and the writing and the scenarios they're putting him in are only adding to that.
Yeah, definitely. What do you guys think of Loki using Mobius's lunch to illustrate his theory that
it's so that the variant's perfect. Hiding out? It's so so in character. It reminds me. This might be a really weirdly deep cut, but there is a bit in one of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio series, which I think it might be the restaurant at the end of the universe, where Ford Prefect is trying to explain to to the other characters how the end of the world is going to go about, and tries to explain it with like a wine glass, which he breaks, and then tries to explain it with like a fork that he steals from somebody else's meal. And that's one of my favourite scenes in that entire show. I love The Hitchhiker's Guide. It's a huge part of my childhood. And seeing that, of like the use of the salad and the cutlery and the salt and the water, just brought that right back home for me. And I loved it so much.
Mm. It just personally reminds me of in Road to El Dorado, where Miguel's like, "So, what's the plan?" And Tulio's just there with like the little cup and like the little like metal thing, and he's like, "Right, so this is us, and this is the boat, and we're gonna steal a longship, grab the provisions, and row back to Spain." And he's like, "Okay." And it just reminds me of like that whole thing. I love that kind of stuff. It's funny.
Yeah, the fact that you just did a Hitchhiker's Deep Cut, you can come back.
Yay!
Yay! Yay! I told you guys would love Rowan.
Hitchhikers is very dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. And I will never be able to get the fact that the Hulk is salt out of
yeah,
my mind.
Yeah, he's salt.
Again.
Yeah,
he is salt. He's a salty boy.
I love the scene in Pompeii. I know we touched on it earlier, but I love the scene in Pompeii because we actually get mischievous Loki here. And I love that we actually get what the god of mischief is supposed to be.
Be free, my horned friends.
Yeah. Horned friends, just letting the goats run wild, him dancing in the street after the volcano erupts, going like, "Nothing matters, dance while you can, enjoy your last meal." And yeah, the fact, it's just, it's so joyous, and it's the end of the world for those people. So it's kind of morbid how funny it is.
One thing that I noticed about that scene, which they mentioned in Doctor Who, but they didn't mention here, is that they didn't have a word for volcano. It was the mountain. Mm. And when he's talking in Latin, the subtitles say volcano. And it's like, they didn't have a word for volcano. What is he saying?
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, it's a wonderfully chaotic scene. And, and again, you know, he is the god of mischief and chaos. And I just love that scene for that. It was great. And that kind of chaos and order thing really comes back to that lovely scene between Morbius and Loki as well, where, you know, I think maybe it says chaos is existence, and they are moving towards a sense of order. So does that sense of order mean that existence will cease to exist?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's I love Mobius's sort of beliefs, because his idea of like the afterlife or whatever, you know, is very in line with other religious ideas of heaven and Valhalla, you know, to Christians, you get to be with God and you're at peace. To the Norse, you go to Valhalla and you have endless feasts and endless battles, and it's just victory and glory all day, every day. And to the TVA, it's you do your job and it works out, and it's peaceful and it's just orderly. I don't think he doesn't even say peaceful. He just says it's order. Which is really interesting.
and a work in progress as well.
Yeah, that's the most, I think, one of the most like suspicious things about the whole TVA is that they don't believe that the timekeepers have finished their job yet, even though they exist outside of linear time. Like, they're still blindly holding on for the TVA, for the timekeepers to finish the sacred timeline, so their work can be done. And I get the impression that it's never going to happen. That's why I get the impression they're not there, or they're not working on it, because it's not set out yet. They're keeping like a not yet finite timeline. Like, the ending isn't decided yet, or what they believe, it's not decided yet. So they're just keeping it up until a point at the minute. But they don't even know what the point is, you know? And that's that, you know, very culty, very blind faith religion kind of thing.
Yeah, and the fact that Ravonna says, you know, they're keeping a very close eye on this case. Maybe this case has something to do with the end game that sorry to use the pun, end game, but the end game that the timekeepers may have.
Mm, yeah.
So maybe it all ties into something at the end.
Yeah, another thing that makes me sus of the timekeepers is the way she says that. It's like, he's like, so what, how are the timekeepers? Obviously, I've never met them. And she goes, she's like, leans in and very sort of dramatically is like, they're keeping such a close eye on the case. And I kind of got the impression that's just her keeping the pressure on, you know, like, we don't know if they are. We just know that she says they are. You know, I don't know. I feel like I'm leaning too far into the idea that they're not even there, but like, that's currently my leading theory. And because I'm just getting big God isn't here anymore vibes from Supernatural. You know, the angels are just running things how they want to and saying it's God. And yeah, but yeah, that bit, I've always been a bit sus of that moment where she's like, they're keeping a very close eye. And it's like, why is she not calm about it? Because everything they think is right. So, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting that when Mobius asks for her permission to take a full platoon to Alabama 2050, and she says, if this goes wrong, there's nothing I can do to help you.
Yeah.
That was a very interesting phrasing of the words as well, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, it would be good, you know, if I am right about Mobius maybe being messed around time-wise, memory-wise. You know, maybe if he messes it up, maybe members of the TVA get pruned, you know? So maybe if he messes this up, he gets reset, he gets pruned or something, which is interesting. But also, that could be an empty threat.
Yeah, it could be.
Because we get the impression that things don't normally go this wrong, you know? Mm.
This entire series is relying on what we as an audience and both as the characters do not know.
Yeah, because it's an illusion.
Rather than what we do know, because it's an illusion. But even more so of, like, something that I've noticed a lot about Marvel films is that they love to employ dramatic irony. So in, like, Infinity War and Endgame, when you're having the scenes with the Avengers and they're like, oh, I wonder what's going on right now, you immediately cut to Thanos and his lieutenants doing their bit. In the first Avengers film, you cut between the helicarrier and Loki and Selvig doing their planning. Marvel loves that. Marvel loves to set up the audience as knowing what's going to happen before the characters do, so that when the thing happens, that's built up the tension in the audience. And we're like, oh, we see it coming. It's going to happen. There it is. They're not doing that this time. We don't know anything. Yeah. We know about as much as Mobius does, if not less. And this is something that I don't think we've ever seen with Marvel, at least that I'm aware of. Even in WandaVision, you see right from the beginning that things are not as they seem, because we see, like, someone looking at a TV screen at the end of the episode, and that's all about what you don't know. We're still given that sense of irony. But this time we don't. And it's all relying on the fact that this is something entirely new for the characters and the audience. So we have no expectations for whatever is out there.
Yeah, I didn't even really kind of think of it like that, because we are getting occasional cuts away to, like, the variant, but, like, not in the way that we get all the, you know, the alternate view or the villainous plan. Because in WandaVision episode 4, I think, is we interrupt this broadcast, which is from, you know, like, Darcy and Jimmy and Monica's point of view outside the Hex. And so halfway through the series, we're taken to the other point of view where arguably the main bad guy, I've forgotten his name now. The bad guy who...
I can't remember. Begins with an H.
Who creates White Vision. We don't like him. Him.
He begins with an H and he has a mustache. That's all I remember.
Yeah, well, we go
He's
to,
a
like,
sergeant. That's all the thing, isn't it? Like, the thing in Marvel is that if anyone's a...
No, not a sergeant. It's Senator is the one that... It's always a bad guy, but he's not a senator. No, it's the... Yeah, whoever that guy was, you know, we get to see him and we get suspicious of his involvement with Vision's body and stuff outside of the Hex, and we get suspicious of Wanda's control and what she's actually doing with her powers. So yeah, we do get that other side, and we're not getting the other side here, because we were getting a bit of the other side of Loki. We were getting a bit of, oh, they're stealing the things, there's a plan coming, but we're not getting any of the other side of the TVA.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah.
Even when you do get those, when we had those cutaways to the variant, it wasn't off the variant's perspective, because we never saw the face. We saw a load of Minutemen getting killed, and then another Minuteman getting the reset, and then the one with when they had their memory controlled and the big fight scene at the beginning. It's more from the perspective of the Minutemen rather than from Loki themselves. So we're not getting that dramatic irony of the audience knows what the villain is planning, but the heroes, or I don't quite know if you can call the TVA and Loki heroes, but the protagonists don't know what the antagonists are up to, but we as an audience do. We don't get that. None of us know what the antagonists are up to until they do it on screen, which is something that Marvel doesn't really do that often, to my awareness.
Yeah, it's exciting.
And even though, Carpenter, you said, you know, we knew it was coming, when we get the female Loki at the end and the taking the hurting is, it's not about you, and then all the time bombs drop. But still a great moment, a brilliant moment.
Epic. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I definitely want to talk about the Lady Loki, because there has been a lot of discourse around it of, so the photos of Lady Loki came out, like the leaked photos of the actress on set in the Loki costume came out way before the series was released. And even then there were people arguing online of like, is it Lady Loki or is it Enchantress? Like, what do we know? Who is this character? We've just seen a blonde American woman in a costume quite similar to Loki's. And the TVA say it's a Loki variant, but is it though? Because we have this setup of the figure of Enchantress, which I will admit I know very little about, but there's a lot of that discourse currently going around of people saying, well, like, oh, this thing proves that it's Lady Loki. Oh, but no, this thing proves that it's Enchantress. And in the Spanish dub for the credits, she's listed as this name. And a lot of people going around trying to figure out who it is. And I think, I don't know whether that was a deliberate play on Marvel's part of, because again, like, they've done that before. They've done the whole, you know, not revealing scripts to Tom Holland so he can't spoiler it and things like that. Yeah. I wouldn't.
That's because he's terrible.
It's because he's terrible at it. But
still,
I wouldn't
treat your actors. Yeah, but yeah.
I wouldn't put it past someone in, you know, the like publicity department to be like, hey, I bet there's going to be a lot of people arguing whether this is Lady Loki or Enchantress. So how about we just leave it open a little bit and let the discourse run, because it's publicity.
So I saw something that summed up sort of the discourse between Enchantress and Lady Loki pretty nicely, which was by Theories by T on TikTok. He is amazing. I get a lot of like, every time I see an episode, I then go and watch his TikToks, because he always points out, like, the Easter eggs and some of the theories surrounding it. And so his video on Enchantress that I saw is basically he went through, like, the evidence and was like, this is a point for it being Lady Loki, and this is a point for it being Enchantress, and you know, counted up the evidence so far. Essentially, the answer is both, from what he thinks and what I can gather, because we can see that from the TVA form, supposedly this Loki goes by Sylvie Lufferdottir, which is Sylvie
Sylvie Laufey's daughter.
Yeah. And we... so Sylvie is the name of the Enchantress, I think. But
yes,
there's
is.
Also a variant of Lady Loki in Young Avengers called Sylvie, I think, who was given or has similar powers to Loki and has the same sort of look as her, but isn't Loki. You know, this Loki... I'm not explaining this very well. But basically, she's kind of both Enchantress and Lady Loki because she's closest to this Young Avengers character.
Right.
And the fact she's chosen to gone to, well, so far we know that she's chosen to go by Sylvie Laffey-Dottison. Dottier.
Laffey's Dottier, yeah.
Yeah. It, you know, it shows the choosing of the name, the different sort of identity, which is really fun to see on screen, particularly as people who have chosen to go by different names than perhaps we were given initially. Because I'm gender fluid, and I go by both my first name and my middle name, depending on who I'm with and that sort of thing. And particularly when I'm feeling more masculine, I go by Carpenter, which is actually my middle name. And I like seeing characters choosing new names and new identities, which is why it's really funny when Loki's talking to Randy, being possessed by Lady Loki, and he's like, I can see why Thor found this so annoying, because I bet Loki just disguises himself as different people all the time, and he's like, no, I'm not Loki, I'm Lady Sif, I don't know what you're talking about, you know? I'm Captain America now, you know? And it's like, it doesn't feel like they're making fun of gender fluid or anything like that, and it doesn't feel like they're being particularly ham-handed with it. They're having fun with disguise, but they're also like respecting the identities of the different Lokis, which is good. It's good to see. It's not just it's not saying, oh, he's not gender fluid, he's just this is just a different Loki, you know? It's not like that. It's just these are Lokis. It's just they have chosen these different identities because they're at different places in their life and they feel these different things, which is what it feels like.
Yeah. I think as well, going on back to like the Lady Loki Enchantress, whatever this discussion is, there is a potential, I guess my slight theory here, based off of the other Marvel shows that we've had so far, is that if this variant Loki survives after the end of the Loki TV series, it is a perfect setup for Enchantress as a villain in the next phase of Marvel films. So if you think about, like, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, we still have John Walker as a character being set up as US agent at the end of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. At the end of WandaVision, we have White Vision out there on his own doing his thing as a character potentially set up for future exploration. If we have this same thing of like the final episode of Loki, we have, you know, a shot or like the post-credit scene of Lady Loki and someone is talking to her and they're like, oh, what should we call you? And she goes, call me Enchantress. And then we see her again as like a potential anti-hero or villain or character for future Marvel films. These TV shows have been set up to bridge the gap between the, is it phase 3 and phase 4 or phase 4 and phase 5? I can't quite remember.
It's sort of it's meant to sort of bridge the gap between the movies for like all the previous movies and then with the introduction of the multiverse.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have that potential there of each of these series so far has given us a character that is almost definitely going to appear again. Like, US Agent is established in the comics. I don't know enough about White Vision to see what that is, but at the end of that series, we've just got this big old robot man flying out and doing his thing.
And also, I think sort of I personally connect more to it, but more importantly, Billy and Tommy are definitely coming back, which is setting up the next generation of Avengers.
Avengers.
Isaiah's grandson as well.
Nephew, grandson, so, yeah.
Nephew, I can't remember. He's also, I think he's a Captain America at some point, I think.
I believe
you know, Hawkeye's children, Morgan Stark, is it Cass, Scott's daughter. They're definitely leaning in to set up the sort of young Avengers, that kind of side of things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, it would be awesome if we end with either Lady Loki, or she becomes Enchantress, or we get like a hint at Kid Loki or something, maybe, which would, Teen Loki, which would be incredible.
Because Kid Loki is one of the Young Avengers. Kid Loki, yeah. and Teen Loki has been a part of the Young Avengers. But yeah, if they take this character as, yes, it is both Lady Loki and Enchantress, as she starts out as this Loki variant and then becomes Enchantress and is then a villain or whoever she is for coming Marvel movies, that's sort of the way that they've taken John Walker, and it's the way that they've set up White Vision. I wouldn't put it past Marvel to have made this show with the same sort of structure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Feige and the team are deviously intellectual when it comes to their forward planning. Mm. And yeah, they have created these TV shows to be vehicles, to be conduits between films, to link up the films. I know they've had to do some shuffling around because of COVID, so they've probably had to change their plan slightly, but they're still functioning as they were meant to function. And it's just, yeah, my mind boggles at how they can look at the next 10 years of films and TV series and go, okay, that's going to introduce this character, we're going to put this character back here, and it's crazy. Mm-hmm. But the machine that is Marvel is rolling along very, very nicely at the moment.
Mm, definitely.
Yeah, to be behind the curtain would be something else. Oh, a quick little mention of behind the curtain of Marvel. We just finished watching The Great British Sewing Bee, which for anyone who isn't in England is basically like the Great British Bake Off. It's like a competition. 12 people come in and it whittles them down to the best sewer, and it's very wholesome. One of the finalists, Raph, during the Since the Sewing Bee was filmed, the montage at the end. So his job is on, it is technically on like costume, but he doesn't do the sewing. He does like the weathering and the aging of costumes, which is a separate and also very important job in theatre and media. Because, you know, you've just got to get those blood splatters exactly right in all the different versions of the costumes. And that's what he does. And so they hinted that he had worked on some Marvel stuff since the Sewing Bee. Okay. Did you actually find out what he was on in the end?
I never found it. I need to keep having a look. But given the Sewing Bee would have been filmed in, what, the summer of 2020?
End of last summer.
So yeah, it could have potentially been the Black Widow film. Potentially that's the only one that springs to mind as something that's going to come out around that time and that would have been maybe shot around then. It was a really interesting little hint of this French sewer who was like, oh, he's working on a marvelous film.
Like, we were like, what?
Oh, that's the pun.
Yeah,
there.
It was so ham-fisted of just the word marvellous with Marvel all in caps. And we're like,
we're not allowed to talk about this, but I love that.
So we end with basically the time bombs skewing all these lines out from the sacred line, which is let's just say the shit has hit the fan, mm-hmm. I think.
Yes.
And I think we should wrap it up. Unless you guys have got any other thoughts or comments that you haven't had a chance to say, I think we've covered quite a lot.
Well, I just, love, you know, when we were talking about Mobius and Loki's friendship earlier, there's another TikToker that I watch, which I also want to shout out, which is The London Eye, the.london.eye. She's brilliant, does hilarious sketches. I think they got really popular during Falcon and the Winter Soldier because they're just so funny as Sam and Bucky. But they were like, it was Mobius and Loki sat at the desk and he was like, Loki, what are you doing? He's like, I'm looking for the apocalypse with the most jet skis. And he's like, why? And he's like, so you can ride a jet ski without it affecting the timeline. And he was like, wait, for me? And he's like, yeah. It's like, why would you do that? Because I'm nice. You know, he's like, no, you're not. And he's like, yeah, but this is fun. So, and I was like, no, I could see Loki doing that.
I can definitely
see
that.
Just being like, here, live a little, man. Here's a jet ski in an apocalypse.
Do you know what? When they were talking about that, and Mobius' his kind of passion for reading about jet skis. It did make me think maybe at the end, maybe before he gets a race some time, he gets to ride on a jet ski. Just
maybe that would be nice.
Just at the end,
Mobius reminds me a little bit of Michael from The Good Place, because Michael is obsessed with human things. He's a demon who has fallen in love with humanity, and it's really sweet. I love that. You know, there's a bit in The Good Place where Michael's just like, oh my god, I bought like this huge bowl of paperclips. Like, isn't this great? Aren't paperclips just the best, you know? And it's just like, whereas Mobius is just like the pinnacle of form and function, the jet ski, you know? Yeah. It's mm-hmm. adorable.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it is lovely.
Yeah, there was one other little thing that I wanted to talk about that I just realised I wrote down during the episode. Something that I have been really excited to see since the moment they announced the Loki show is the fact that now we are finally getting the display of Loki's powers that we were denied in the other films. I think the one film that potentially shows us a bit more of Loki's power is the first Thor film. His ability to massively duplicate himself, or, you know, like duplication casting, as they called it in the episode. Whereas in other films, we just sort of see him like, oh, do a little bit of green magic and then stab with my knife. Yeah. I'm very happy that we get to see, especially the use of possession, because that's something that we've never seen Loki do before. The possession, just even the fact that he dries himself off with magic, that's just a thing he can do. I remember watching like the trailers and seeing little hints of like the green flashes of magic doing things that we have not seen it do before, and that is very exciting for me, because Loki has been done dirty, I think, in the other movies by what powers they let him show. So I'm looking forward to... He's a god. He's a demigod. He's a god of mischief and chaos and trickery. And, you know, the knives just get a bit old after a while. So I'm excited to see that we can get a little bit more out of him now.
I do love how B-15 takes the knives straight away.
Not for you.
So close. We were so close. Yes. We will get a cool knife flip somewhere, I think.
Yeah. It is interesting, going back to both of your discussion about the Enchantress. It is interesting that Loki calls the possession enchantment.
Yes.
Yes. True. Because he's obviously...
And it's something that he wouldn't do. He says like it's amateurish and cowardly, but you know, it's a good move, but I wouldn't do it. So that's already setting up their differences there.
Yeah, and also the could that be you? I mean, I would have gone for a suit, but yeah, it could be.
Yeah,
because we know that Loki that we're familiar with would rather transform himself instead of possess someone. Is interesting. Yeah, the differences are really interesting already.
I am very much looking forward to the next episode.
Absolutely.
Definitely to see what's what. Okay, I think we're going to wrap that up here today. I just want to thank Carpenter and Rowan for joining me today. It's been an absolute blast with you both.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. Would you both like to plug any social media projects or podcasts?
Yeah, after you, Carpenter.
Yes, so you can find me on the social medias as you can find me on the social medias as Vintage Tea. That's vintage_t3a. I'm on most things: Insta, Twitter, Facebook page, and also on the podcast The Nightmare Portal, which both me and Rowan are in. And occasionally I manage to sneak in as a guest on The Chasing Tales, which Rowan can tell you more about.
I can. Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter is RowanMay_. But if you want to find me more often, you can find me at Chasing Tales RPG on every social media platform, Twitter, Instagram, more specifically on Twitch. We are a TTRPG network. We have an ongoing homebrew D&D 5th edition campaign that I am a player in. We've currently just hit level 15. At the time of recording, we are on a 2-week break, but we will be back with our campaign on the 8th of July. I don't know when this episode is getting released. Maybe we'll be back by then. I don't know. But yeah, we're a group of 20-somethings that love to play games together. And that's where we started playing as a home game and then got set up on Twitch. And we've loved every minute of it. So you can find me there playing various different games. That's Chasing Tales RPG on all social media. And you can find me at Witch and Craft Games, who are an indie international game development company. We write TTRPGs, we play TTRPGs, we like TTRPGs. We are currently working on a project that I don't know how much I can say about, but if you like Marvel and if you like superheroes specifically, then this game is going to be for you. So check out Witch N Craft on Twitter. That's Witch and then the letter N Craft, or Witch and Craft Games on Twitch. And you can find me and all of the other wonderful game devs there. And that's me.
You potentially heard it here first, folks. Could this be a We Made This exclusive?
Excellent, excellent. Very, 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 very busy people. I myself am also very busy. You can find me around the We Made This network on various podcasts. I host a fringe podcast called Observing the Pattern. We are deep into season 3 with that. You can find me on 2 Star Trek podcasts. I co-host Make It So with Kurt North. We've got an episode dropping soon about the recent trailer that's just dropped for Picard season 2. We have another Star Trek podcast called Rarely Going, all about the Star Trek animation series Lower Decks. That is coming back for season 2 in August, so we should be back to discuss that. And there's also a secret film project that me and Tony have, and I will keep that quiet until Tony gives us more details on that, but that is in the making as we speak. Thanks for joining us for another episode, and remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network, and Loki is not all we're discussing. So after the music, we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in a moment. We shall see you next time on podcast 616, where we are burdened with glorious purpose to talk about the MCU.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Pick a disc.
Imagine if George R.R. Martin had a mental breakdown, decided that his main mode of transport was talking to him and telling him to kill people, and he somehow managed to find a way into Game of Thrones, and he was told to kill Sansa Stark because she reminded him of an ex-girlfriend. That's technically what the plot of this album is an analogue
yeah.
to.
Yeah, you kind of nailed it.
Yeah. So...
Right in the childhood.
Normally, we take it in turns. I pick a show that you've never heard of. You pick a show that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And we flip it and we flip it and we flip it. But we're doing Mad Mutant Month. This was your idea.
Yeah,
tell everyone about Mad Mutant Month.
Well, because the vaccines turned us all into mad mutants.
Really?
No, we were looking for shows that have sort of like spanned through generations of childhood, whether that's through reboots or whether from like, we were looking for, yeah, shows that sort of like managed to span through Gen X, Millennial to Gen Z. And one of the ones that has done that through both reboots and reruns is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
Cerebral Jukebox.
The whole premise of the song is young, you know, lads going off to get blown to bits for no real reason other than they were sent there by a magistrate or needed the money. It's a real stark contrast, the whole series and this song, about patriotism, duty, and the sort of horrors of it as well, that you'll probably die. Because in the Napoleonic Wars and the sort of preceding wars, you know, these were like teenagers getting sent to countries that they'd not even read about in books because they couldn't read, to get blown to bits.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
Hello, and welcome to Podcast 616, all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe for the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host, Carpenter Lockwood, and today we'll be diving into the...
What is this? I am Carpenter.
I'll presume you're me?
If anything, you're me.
Well, either way, you're both lesser variants of me, the true Carpenter Lockwood.